Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Global Health Collective podcast. My name is Shania Bopa. I am a PhD candidate, founder of a nonprofit organization called the Canadian Courage Project, and I have been collaborating with Plan Canada on various digital initiatives and workshop facilitation. So Plan International Canada is a global development and humanitarian organization dedicated to advancing girls' equality around the world. This organization has seen the ripple effect of positive change that occurs every time a girl steps into her potential. It's amazing. Plan Canada is one of our most popular global organizations that we discuss in the classroom. And so I feel really grateful to work with the team each and every year. I have with us here today, Ajitha Vidyarthi, the Senior Advisor of Gender Equality and Inclusion at Plan International Canada. Ajitha has worked towards the protection and promotion of human rights, particularly the rights of women and girls, since 2019. This work has included research, advocacy, and technical support to gender transformation, rights-based programs, and implemented by Canadian and India-based nonprofits, government, and UN agencies. She's worked with partners in Africa and South Asia, and we have alongside Ajitha, Jennifer Wanny, Plan International Canada's Youth Council alumnus and co-researcher for Plan International's Global State of the World's Girls Report. She is a youth advocate with Plan International Canada and was part of the organization's Youth Council. Through her participation with Plan's Youth for Gender Equality Initiative, she was a speaker at Women Deliver, an international conference on gender equality. She is also a young director with the Girls 20 program and is currently serving as a member of Results Canada's board of directors. And in addition, she served as both a junior and senior ambassador for Regina's Multicultural Council representing African in diaspora. This year, she is the Executive Director of Community Wellness for Black in Sask, an organization committed to addressing anti-Black racism in Saskatchewan. So, welcome. Thank you so much for being here. I really, really appreciate your time today. I'm just really excited to talk to you both because when this podcast comes out, it will be International Day of the Girl, which is a key global moment to celebrate the power of girls and highlight some of the barriers we face, especially when it comes to our activism. I know Plan International recently conducted a global research study, which involved 1,000 young female activists around the world to understand the challenges they face when it comes to their activism. Ajitha, can you tell us a bit more about that?
The State of the World's Girls Report is a series of Plan International research reports released annually around, as you said, the International Day of the Girl. These reports seek to raise the voices of girls from around the world, focusing on issues that matter most to them. Some examples include from the past political participation, experiences of online harassment, the impact of media stereotypes on girls' aspirations, among many others. This year's research shines a spotlight on girls and young women activists leading the fight for equality. As you mentioned, it's based on the lived experiences of 1,000 activists from 26 countries, including Canada. What was groundbreaking for me about this was the fact that majority of the interviews were led by the 70 young women researchers who are themselves activists and change makers, including Jen, who we have here with us today. This report is filled with insights into what it's like to be a girl activist in this year. What are their challenges? What motivates them to keep going despite all of the odds stacked against them? Coming to some of the top line findings, I mean, it does break my heart to share that 1 in 5 respondents reported fear for their safety when engaging in activism. 1 in 4 said they felt emotionally or psychologically unwell or anxious during their activism. And 54% identified a lack of finances as the main barrier hindering their activism efforts. But despite this really concerning data, most girl and young women activists remained determined and saw activism as their life's main work. It does give me hope that 95% of respondents believed that their activism has had a positive impact on them, despite the figures I shared earlier.
Wow. Did you say 54% of participants report lack of funding and lack of confidence.
That's right.
So let's break this down, because personally, when I was building my nonprofit with my sister, this was our hardest struggle as well. Fundraising, launching items, trying to innovate, it can be quite discouraging. So how can we empower women to go after that funding? And structurally, how can we implement more inclusive and easy ways for funding to be accessed?
You know, I want to start by saying that one of the most significant ways to advance gender equality is to restore feminist activism that is led by girls. Mm-hmm. And this report, all of the survey respondents relied on self-funding or fundraising activism, much like you mentioned about your struggles. And this is simply not acceptable. Girls remain committed to their causes, but they need to be supported. And for this, we need flexible and diverse funding, incorporating small grants and long-term financing. We also need to talk about shifting more power to and trust in young people, in actual action, not just words. And this includes removing these bureaucratic hurdles and barriers. It includes working with feminist intermediaries and directly funding girl-led organizations. Now, more than ever, our collective advocacy, we need to ensure through our collective advocacy that national laws and policies make it possible for girls and young women to organize without the fear of backlash. And I'm so glad you asked this, you know, because I want to say that it's not just about funding. It's also about developing girls' capacity and skills, including things like mentorship, leadership, network building, access to mental health and well-being support. And I'm happy to share that many of Plan Canada's current global programs prioritize direct partnerships with young women-led organizations through grant making. And these are part of large-scale multi-year projects on issues that matter to girls that range from sexual and reproductive health and rights to ending child marriage and other forms of gender-based violence. So we do see examples of this happening, but again, far fewer.
And Jen, from your perspective, what do you think as a young person in the field now?
Yeah, I definitely agree that that's one of the biggest hurdles I've faced as an activist. That has really also been an area that I'm scared that I will just never overcome sometimes, because I'm not an expert in finances. My culture, the way I grew up, never really engaged me with finances and how to engage with finances. So naturally, it was just an area that was very intimidating to me. And I even remember during, now known as Fora Network, being a young director with then Girls 20, one of the workshops that I went through was the art like of fundraising. What does fundraising mean? And I learned about fundraising as a basis of storytelling. And that really empowered me, because it taught me that I can use my story. And don't be afraid to ask for money. Don't be afraid to reach out and cold call and ask for money. I think that is definitely a skill I'm glad I learned at a very young age, because even as young activists, I really encourage like my counterparts and myself to just try. You know, I think it's so easy to be scared of failure, especially when it comes to finances. But I've learned to try and keep trying, because eventually I got a yes along the way, and it has really helped me within my journey. Another tool I would suggest, because a lot of the participants that we worked with, a lot of our activism, is collective activism. So I find that dedicating one person, two people, or a team of people just to fundraising and finances really helps push further in that barrier of getting funding. Because I know as activists, we like to do it all sometimes. And I've learned the art of leadership is sharing leadership as well. And being able to dedicate someone to just, you know, seeking finances, seeking funding, in-kind resources as well. It's not always just money that us activists are seeking. I remember hosting a rally in my city and calling grocery stores, like, we need water, we need masks, we need hand sanitizer. And being able to be creative is definitely a skill that young activists hone. And I think when we come together as a collective and we're able to dedicate specific roles to individuals, I see a lot of progress. But the reality also is, as a young activist, is also a council member with Plan International Canada, I also had the opportunity to advocate in different spaces. And I'm very proud to say that as young people that I'm able to see in different spaces, such as the council or in other specific roles, there's always young people advocating for a diversity of funding. And it's really good to see the progress in that, whether that be within organizations like Plan International or working with government or working in partnership with different community members. So continuously speaking out about that barrier, I've also seen movement in overcoming.
I think one thing that is really important that both of you have highlighted is trusting young people, but also empowering those young people and those young women activists. Because I think it's really important from a young age, empowering women to feel like they can do it all and they can do anything that they put their minds to is such an important factor in them actually pushing boundaries to, let's say, find more funding and, you know, advocate for themselves in those situations where they are asking for money, applying for a grant, applying for a program. You know, having that confidence is really important. And I think what you mentioned, Jen, needing a leader or mentor that is also advocating for you is really important, because it's someone you look up to, it's someone who you trust, and you know it's someone who is looking out for your best interest in mind, and that can be very difficult to find. I know the research was one of the largest studies of female activists to date, which is super, super amazing. I revolve everything I do personally on data. So I saw that 25% of participants shared that they were unwell or anxious during activism. Do you mind speaking to how this was shared and what can we do to reduce this anxiety for such courageous young girls in the world?
Yeah, as a co-researcher, it was such a privilege to have that conversation with young people. It really felt like I was just talking to my friends about, like, hey, what has your experience been going through activism? And one of the recurring themes is that feeling of anxiety, or, you know, putting your mental health at risk within advocacy. And to be honest, I'm glad that we're finally having that conversation, because as a young activist, I'm engaged with amazing opportunities such as this. And sometimes people be like, oh, wow, like, that was so amazing. How do you do it? I'm like, I'm scared. I'm nervous. And like, most times I usually refrain from doing opportunities like this because I know I'm putting myself in a position that makes me feel uncomfortable and unwell. And I think being able to hear other participants speak on the fact that they had that emotion as well makes me find comfort in the fact that as long as I've been doing this, it still has its own difficulties when it comes to my mental health and my mental well-being, and balancing being a full-time student and having a part-time job and having all these different roles. Sometimes it doesn't really feel like you're really excelling in any of those areas because you're trying to do it all in all of those areas. And when building those supports, I think reports such as the State of the World Girls Report is so important because it makes you realize you're not alone. And I think the easiest thing to hear when you're going through something difficult is that what you're going through is actually a part of the journey. Like, it's not as hard as it is to hear sometimes. It's our journey is not always so unique to just us as individuals, but it's a shared experience amongst others. And I remember completing the interviews and being like, wow, how nice would it be to have a sharing circle where young women can come together and say, hey, like, everything aside, all policy aside, all barriers aside, like, I just need to have this conversation. And as a new participant here in Ottawa, as a new student in Ottawa, I've been able to engage with organizations, specifically organizations for Black women, where I go to sharing circles and we talk about the things that we go through. And I have found so much peace in community and being able to speak and being able to be validated. And so I look forward to this report, of course, validating our experiences, because that's the power of data. When it is collected, it shows that these issues have been going on for a while, but also leveraging it to push forward policies and opportunities that look at reducing those numbers, or at least supporting us through those journeys as well. So I definitely, that was one of the data that I found comfort in receiving as an individual. And I also feel comfort in knowing I can bring it back to my community and my peers and say, hey, you're not alone. you know?
I'd love to build on that, Jen. I could not agree more with you. I think there's so much value in older generations of women activists to talk openly and authentically about their own self-doubt, right? Even imposter syndrome. And as you said, it never hurts to know that you're not alone and that others have had similar experiences and survived today. And again, this is linked to mentorship. It's linked to having those courageous conversations about how these feelings that we're all feeling at different points of our lives are really just manifestations of the very same entrenched gender norms that feminist activists dedicate their lives to fight against, right? We need more intergenerational solidarity in our sector. I could not agree more. And secondly, we've all heard recently, experts have estimated that it will take 131 years to achieve gender equality. That's five whole generations away from us. And then there's the whole question of safety. That came up really strongly. I mean, all of the data on anxiety, on stress, and a lot of that was linked to feelings of lack of safety. And I feel that it's absolutely non-negotiable for governments and donors to step up and champion zero tolerance to all forms of gender-based violence and discrimination. We need to do more to create support systems for young women to thrive, prioritize their safety, health, and well-being. You know, feminist activism, by its very nature, is about dismantling historical power relations. It therefore attracts opposition from those afraid of changing the power status quo. And therefore, we must demand stronger protective measures for the work of girls and young women. We cannot wait 131 years to do it.
And I think one thing that we saw in this report is the urgency with A, having these discussions openly with our colleagues, our friends, our workplaces, and B, being that older sister to young women in your own community is so important because it never hurts, like Jen mentioned, to know that you're not alone. And I saw that self-doubt was a huge component trickled in throughout the report. And it is something that you don't often discuss with your colleagues or even your friends, but it is so real in everyone's lives. And I'm so amazed as to how you were able to capture that in the report. Do you mind discussing your takeaways from a personal standpoint? So Ajitha, you as a woman in a leadership role and Jen as a young leader.
Well, Shania and Jen, this question takes me down a memory lane, back into very long years. And then when I look back at my life, especially at my childhood years, and then at my adult life, I honestly see two very different people. As a young adolescent, I recall numerous opportunities where I spoke fearlessly in my school to even press conferences in my home country, India. And then when I got to my 20s, I recall nothing but absolute fear, self-doubt, and a complete lack of confidence. More times than not, I remember finding myself silenced by this fear of violence in a world that told me in no uncertain terms that I was sexist and silent. And let me acknowledge that what I experienced as late as my 20s, largely because of my sheltered upbringing, hearing from the last decade, and constantly searching for the confidence that came so easily to the younger woman. And I see that comes so naturally to political change makers in their own right. And this journey of unlearning has not been easy, and it continues. What helps me is courageous conversations like this one, where we can bring our authentic and vulnerable selves. I do believe in the power of sisterhood. I believe that that is real. I believe in the power of holding each other.
Thank you so much for sharing, because like everything you were saying was just, it was like you were speaking to me. So I really appreciate it. And definitely the feeling of feeling like you're most powerful when you're silent. And for me, how that resonated is I'm so afraid of making mistakes, you know, especially with social media now and everything is online and everything is recorded. There is that pressure that there's always eyes on you. That I see a lot of young people, myself included, sometimes is like comparison. You know, comparing yourself to other people in your field or comparing. Something I've learned to combat this, and even just this week, because it's a constant bringing yourself back to the space where you have to take care of yourself, and self-doubt and this negative talk that might go within yourself, is to be in a state of gratitude,
not for things I've done, but for who I am as well. And even just as preparing for this podcast, I remember walking home yesterday. I was busy on campus writing an essay all night, thinking, like, life is difficult. And, you know, I just feel like I'm so stuck in a space where I'm doing things I don't want to do, aka the essay. But just before I entered the house, 3 months I'm going on a podcast tomorrow. And not only that, it's connected to a research opportunity I did in the spring. And I had that opportunity. It's so easy to get lost in that self-doubt and that negative talk. But in those moments, like, my roommate called me one time cooking, and I was talking to myself, and I'm like, I love you. And having that positive self-talk and just knowing that I'm constantly in a season of bringing myself back to the space where I have to take care of myself and know that I am one of the most important ingredients in my advocacy journey and in seeing the change I want in is so important. And so I'm even glad we're having this conversation because it reminds me that this is all a part of that journey. There was a time where I was super confident and then self-doubt and then super confident and self-doubt. Just being mindful of the season and the headspace you're in really helps me to take care of myself. But yeah, thank you for asking that question. And I would even ask you, Shania, if you experience, you know, self-doubt in your experience within academia, within this podcast, and how you combat those emotions and those just those thoughts as well.
Mm-hmm. This is such a great question. I have never really thought about it before, but I have thought about it. 2019, I created this theory called failure training. And I remember feeling so anxious and stressed when I would receive a rejection or like a no, or someone told me I couldn't do something. And I just felt like I stopped myself from trying anything for a very long time. And so I realized that this idea of failure, if you are someone who is a perfectionist like me, or you really like excelling in school and that's what you're used to and that's what you know, not being able to excel at a new sport or a new activity or building a nonprofit, for example. And so I would intentionally every night from 10 to 11 p.m. submit like 50 applications to jobs that I was not qualified for, just to failure train my mind to hear the word no and to get the rejection in my email inbox. So now I feel a sense of immunity to external validation. And I also will say that self-doubt, I don't think that for me, I mean, I try to tell myself this every day, that if there's no data to support the doubt, then you can't have self-doubt. So let's say I'm like, I have self-doubt that I can play basketball. I can't play basketball. Like, there's no way I'm going to be good on that team. But the data says that I've been on 2 basketball teams and I have played basketball really well. So Shania, you kind of have to ask yourself, why do you have the self-doubt if the data shows otherwise? So if you've put yourself in a room and gotten the funding, or you've put yourself in a position of being an activist in your community once, then statistically you can do it again. And I think I just try to bring data to any self-doubt thought that I have. But one really tangible thing that I think every young woman, every human could be thinking about is if we keep our promises to ourselves, then we have greater trust in ourselves and our capabilities. So even snoozing the alarm in the morning or telling yourself, I'm going to go on that walk at 4 p.m. and not going on the walk, every time you disrespect yourself in a way of not holding your own promises to yourself, I think makes that self-doubt voice a bit stronger, because the self-doubt then percolates and is like, yeah, you haven't done it before, and you kind of let yourself down before. You let yourself down last week. Why wouldn't you let yourself down again? And so I really think it's the micro habits and the little micro tasks on a daily basis. Jen, I see you nodding.
I'm like, that's so good. To the first half of what you said, I think what was so important is you really learned yourself and what you respond to, and you built a system that works for you. And I love that for you. And to the second point about those small habits, something I've learned is, of course, like, not fulfilling your promise sometimes is inevitable, but allow yourself to restart the next day. Right? And I think that's so important and something I had to learn. Like, I might have a bad week where I'm just not getting my routines in and all those things. And it gets into a cycle sometimes, because that self-doubt comes with, you can't fulfill it. But allowing myself to restart and not carry the weight of the doubt and the guilt is so important. But to your point about habits, routine has been my best friend. And being able to know that I could do it for myself every morning and I could do it for myself every night is so important to knowing that, like, wow, like, I really do a lot for myself. You know, I have my morning routine, I have my night routine, and those habits really reassure me that I really built a system for myself. So I definitely resonate with a lot of what you said just there.
Thank you. I will say, too, ageism has a lot to do with the way, A, we feel empowered to go out and either empower other girls in the community or advocate for what you believe in. How was this relevant potentially in the report or in your experiences gathering the data and your positionality both in your roles now?
I really love this question about ageism, because to the beginning of our conversation, that whole idea of trusting young people and what that looks like, I think is a challenge for a lot of people who have youth initiatives as well, is do you trust young people to be at the conception of the work you do and help you carry out a program, help build a program for young people? I think is super important. And especially when it comes to ageism, the one thing I've realized is, like, tokenism is, I thought, something we would talk about more in the past, but it's still very prevalent, where young people are used within programs to be presented for donors to be seen, to be a part of PR a lot, right? And not actually a part of the workings and the operations of an organization. And one thing I love about Plan is they've really set the standard as to what it means for me to be engaged as a young person, so that when I work with other organizations, I know that there's a certain way that I deserve to be engaged as a young person, as a researcher, for example. And I was really grateful to be a part of this opportunity with State of the World Girls Research Report, because it empowered me to say, hey, I can be a part of research and be the subject as well as a young person, because it was peer-to-peer interview, I think was super important. And so the research report was definitely very empowering for me as a young person. And also the data, being able to use it to reflect the issue of ageism that happens within activism, the issues that particularly impact young girls activists. I really appreciate the data and how it will be used to talk about the barriers that come when young people in activism as well.
I think the one thing I want to add here is that ageism would be one of the reasons why Plan Canada pioneered the International Day of the Girl. As you said at the beginning, Shania, it's a global movement. It's also a movement that spotlights the power and the potential of girls in all of their diversity, and to generate attention for the unique barriers that they face due to their age, their gender, and other identity factors. And definitely we need to come alongside them and turn up the dial on their voices and listen, especially in a world where being a girl activist or a change maker is not celebrated. And I would like to share some examples of our youth leadership programs, such as Girls Belong Here and other programming that help provide the platforms and tools for youth to act locally and think globally, and ensure that all youth, especially girls and gender diverse young people, know their rights and can really truly step into their potential.
Yeah, that is great. Both of you highlighting your positionality and your experience. I think for me, ageism is so prevalent, and I think it was Ajitha earlier, you mentioned we need to trust young people and we need to empower them to be at the table. And we're very lucky to be seeing that more and more slowly happening, but I think it needs to happen a little bit sooner, and especially in terms of inclusivity of the voices around the table, including women at the table, from senior leadership all the way down to young folks who are on the ground doing the work and hearing all the perspectives in the same room. Now, this report was phenomenal, phenomenally written, and such important work, but how can this report be a tool for our young change makers today and our folks in leadership and government? So on both ends of the spectrum, you know, the young girl that's like, I really want to advocate for this cause, but I don't know how, but then also a CEO of a company who's like, how can I bring more young voices to the table and bring that collective action?
Start, Jen, and feel free to jump in whenever. I think one thing that resonated strongly with me was that the data in this report, it's not just statistics. It represents real stories of hope and inspiration and showing really the determined optimism of girls around the world. And what came across so evidently was that despite the uphill journey that activism is, girls are a force to be reckoned with. The report serves as a strong call to action to everyone to support girls' inherent power as change makers. One quote that resonated with me was by Mazoon Al-Milahan, who's a 25-year-old refugee and education rights activist from Syria. And she said, girls are often told that their voices are unimportant, but the findings of the report very clearly underscore that fighting for girls' rights and the rights of others can never be a lost cause. And so to recap, what are we asking for through this report? What are our calls for action? We're asking for funding. Governments, donors, INGOs need to make flexible funding and non-financial resources available for girls' action, period. We're also asking for gender discrimination and stereotyping to be tackled at all levels and for strengthening of the meaningful engagement component with young women. Third, we're asking for protection of civic spaces so that civil liberties, including girls' rights to protest peacefully, are defended. And lastly, we're very clearly asking for girls to be safe by those in authority, including protection from harassment, violence, and abuse, both online and in person. I want to quickly add that Plan International is committed to elevating the voices of young women, activists, and backing their ambitions for change at every opportunity. And we call on everyone, governments, donor community, civil society networks, and individuals to join us in support of girls' rights until we are all equal.
Yeah, I think with this particular report, there's so many different purposes that it can fulfill. Definitely on an individual level, activists can go to it to find that community as well, to hear about their experiences and data. I think for me personally, that's one of the pieces that really stands out to me, is being able to be a young woman activist, read this data, and see myself and my story reflected is very important. And I think it's a powerful tool to empower the individual and the collective of young women, girl activists. I also think that it also brings light to what is important to young girl women activists and allows people to engage with those topics as well. And the two that really stood out were gender-based violence and sexual reproductive health rights, which is an issue that people are being engaged with globally. I think it's a call on all people with any form of agency, with any ability to make change, to be able to also engage with these topics and find the way in which they can support the activists who are at the forefront of making the change within their own rightful communities as well. And I think something that's also very important is understanding that a lot of the local issues that we deal with also have a provincial, state level, and also a global level as well. So being able to have that cross-cultural, cross-border connection with other activists is very important, and learning that as much as there were a lot of voices involved within this report, our experiences differ depending on our location. What funding opportunities look like in Canada are very different from what funding opportunities might look like in Europe or West Africa or Central Africa or Latin America. And I think it's important to also zero in on not having a blanket statement for what the experience looks like, being able to connect where we can to customize what support and resources look like for everyone within their region, within their own right as well. And so there are so many different ways in which this report could be of use to anyone. I think to start is for people to read with it, to engage and see what part of the report calls you to action. And being able to step into that as well is very important. And I look forward for all the participants that I was able to engage to see how their lived experience has come to life through this report as well. And I truly believe that it has the potential of being a living, breathing document, not only for PLAN, but for all organizations and entities alike as well.
You both have put that answer so eloquently in terms of how this report can be a tool for young change makers and folks across all levels of every organization in the world. I think for me, the biggest thing is this tool can be a tool in our toolkit. You know, if you're a student in a classroom, if you are a young mom, if you are a executive, it really doesn't matter what your role is, but it does matter how you utilize this data to inform your positionality in the world, but also how this tool can inform future action for your team, community, project, and purpose. So I want to end off this episode with a inspiring note, because you both are just have shared so much wisdom and have really brought this report to life for so many people that will see the link to the report in the bio of the description of the podcast. But I have one last question. What is one quote or mantra that you live by in the world?
Off the top of my head, to be honest, I couldn't do everything I've done and be engaged how I've been engaged if it wasn't for the grace of God that has been placed upon me as an individual. You know, I grew up in a family of faith, and that's what really made me step into caring for others. And so the quote I live by is, by the grace of God, that regardless of what happens, by the grace of God, everything will turn out how it needs to be, and taking one day at a time is a mantra I live by. So by the grace of God is what I go by, and I'm really grateful for His grace that I was able to be a part of this opportunity as well.
And that is very similar to what I had in mind, going back to our conversation on self-doubt after years of struggling and continuing to struggle with it. I think one thing that I remind myself every day is to be kind. Start with myself when I'm thinking of kindness. And like you said, Jen, that it will be all right. One day at a time, especially after the pandemic and after handling little babies during the pandemic and lockdowns, it's one day at a time. It will be all right. And be kind to everyone around you, but to yourself.
Great. And on that note, I want to say thank you to Ajitha and Jen for taking the time today to share their amazing insights. And for anyone interested in learning more about PLAN International Canada, please visit their website, the link in this podcast description, as well as our social posts. I just really hope everyone took away the key learning lessons from this episode and can hopefully share it with the women in their community, spread kindness, empower those around you, make sure that every single woman in your life feels capable and confident to go after her dreams and advocate for folks in her own community, and happy International Day of the Girl.